certainty I want to be in the warm hall of your love and mine. I feel you all around me, and to take your hand along the sand. But I may as well try and catch the wind. When sundown pales the sky, I want to hide a while behind your smile, and everywhere I'd look your eyes I'd find. For me to love you now would be the sweetest thing. 'Twould make me sing. But I may as well try and catch the wind. Rain has hung the leaves with tears. I want you near to kill my fears, to help me to leave all my blues behind. Standing in your heart is where I want to be and long to be. But I may as well try and catch the wind.
That was Donovan with Catch the Wind. Oh, but you may as well try and catch the wind. Now that fits us quite well here at the New American Dream Radio Show. You may have noticed my penchant for 60s music for these intro pieces. Well, partly it's because that's when I came of age, more or less. That music in those times just won't let me go. But if you think about it, this new American dream of ours, this dream of a better world where love is more important than hate and peace is the goal rather than war, this is a very 60s-style dream. In a very real way, its roots go back a lot farther. For instance, that Jewish carpenter and fisherman who made such a mark upon the world about 2,000 years back. Whether or not you believe in Christianity, you certainly can't deny the impact of Jesus Christ. Yet, his teachings did not end up eradicating war. In fact, his followers have created some of the worst ones. Go figure. Seems to me, we just don't listen. We go off our own way with our petty agendas. We ignore what God or other people want us to do. We ignore the many for the few, rather than emulating Star Trek Spock, who famously said, "The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the one." We look for an edge over everyone else. We look for a way for that we can live in luxury at the expense of everybody else. That is just wrong. I went caroling Friday night. It was the first time since I was in high school. My girlfriend back then, well, she was my girlfriend in 10th grade at least. She moved on after that. But Carrie used to invite the whole class over to her house. We'd all wander around her Bryn Mawr neighborhood singing and having a great time. Mind you, the whole class was only 48 people. Was a pretty small school. But they had a house big enough to absorb us all. It was great fun, a wonderful tradition, and I was thinking of it as I headed over to church last Friday for a new caroling tradition. Six of us from the church visited four parishioners and sang our hearts out at each stop. It was a wonderful time. Someone later commented about the singing, surprisingly good for such a discordant group. I'll take it as a compliment. And on Sunday night, I got a Christmas gift. I didn't want the flu. I didn't know which store to take it back to, so just been trying to get on with it. Lorraine was sick most of last week. I had no idea she felt this bad. Wow. Now it's threatening to come back to her. I think and hope and pray mine has passed for the most part, and I hope hers will really soon. And if any of you are experiencing it, you all have my sympathy and my prayers. There seems to be a lot of flu going around this year, and it's a particularly virulent strain. It's no fun at all. And on that note, I'm going to save my voice a little bit, hoping to make it through the rest of the show. So here's my friend and co-host, Mike Palachek, an American writer.
Chuck, tonight we welcome a special guest, Lori Price. Lori Price is the editor-in-chief of Citizens for Legitimate Government. Well, we went to, my family and I went to Les Mis, the hot hit movie in Duluth a couple nights ago. In Les Mis, at the very last, in the final act, they sing, "We will walk behind the plowshare and put away the sword." It's the last scene at the barricades, triumphant over the bad guys. Do you hear the people sing, lost in the valley of the night? It is the music of a people who are climbing to the light. For the wretched of the earth, there is a flame that never dies. Even the darkest night will end and the sun will rise. They will live again in freedom in the garden of the Lord. They will walk behind the plowshare. They will put away the sword. The chain will be broken, and all men will have their reward. Will you join in our crusade? Who will be strong and stand with me? Well, that's such a movie, even such a line, could be said in a major motion picture in the United States these days. Well, there are parts of the movie that have connections to our own situation, the poor, the rich, the broad disparity, the obscene disparity. And then there are people willing to fight. And then the last big closing scene with a huge barricades, the victory, the song, all the good stuff. Well, who knows? Who knows what will come of our own situation if there ever will be a triumphant, inspiring, goose flesh, spine-tingling, big closing song. Probably, maybe, the guys and gals we are fighting are a little more sophisticated than the French monarchy, but we'll do the best we can. I guess we'll see, huh? One thing we can do is to notice. Notice the people who are doing the work these days, who are on the barricades, as they say. To catch up or keep up, read The Nuclear Resistor online. Listen to Kevin Barrett on American Freedom Radio, Jim Fetzer at The Real Deal Radio Show, and read Veterans Today online. And you can also sneak the American History textbook from your daughter's backpack and rip the pages out. Tear the pages up, tiny little pieces, and flush them down the toilet. Then listen to an episode or two of Black Op Radio or listen to and read Real News online. Also, remember your real history. Remember that the American Revolution started a long time ago. Remember that Fred Hampton and Mark Clark were on the barricades and were murdered in their beds by the Chicago police. Remember Mumia Abu-Jamal, the Omaha 2, Ed Poindexter, and David Rice. Remember Leonard Peltier, David Gilbert, and there are likely many others who today are still in prison for acts committed in the last century in resistance to the military of the United States of America. And then we have the Transform Now plowshares. Three Americans headed to trial in February for damaging United States of America nuclear weapons designed and produced in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. We'll be speaking to one of those three next week on this show. These weapons cost taxpayers who work nine jobs and get up at five to take their kids to daycare and have the express purpose of killing millions of people. And it is the folks who are trying to stop that who are now facing long sentences for sabotage. Talk about being on the barricades. Well, there is a place like no place on earth, a land full of wonder, mystery, and danger. Some say to survive it, you need to be as mad as a hatter. And if you come to understand this mad place, the others will tell you that you are entirely bonkers. But I'll tell you a secret. All the best people are. Back to you, Chuck.
If you stand for the national anthem,
you might be an American.
If you stand for fighter jets flying over the stadium,
you might be an American.
If you stand for the bombing of children,
you might be an American.
If you recite the Pledge of Allegiance,
you might be an American.
If you recite the latest from TV nightly news as if it were not merely propaganda,
you might be an American.
If you pay for bombs that kill children,
you might be an American.
If you pay for soldiers who kill children,
you might be an American.
If you hate immigrants coming into your town,
you might be an American.
If your great-grandparents were immigrants coming into town,
you might be an American.
If you put your neighbors in cages because they're too poor to live without stealing, because you have taken far more than your share,
you might be an American.
If you are the only ones in the world who believe what is printed in American newspapers and presented as news on American television,
you might be an American.
You believe that 9/11 was done by some guys with box cutters,
you might be an American.
You believe that Oklahoma City was done alone by Timothy McVeigh,
you might be an American.
If you believe the United States government and United States government media official stories about Waco, the Gulf of Tonkin, JFK, RFK, and MLK,
you might be an American.
If you believe that Senator Paul Wellstone's plane crashed in the North Minnesota woods on accident,
you might be an American.
You believe you are the hope of the world,
you might be an American.
If you are at this moment driving full speed in your SUV back to your home and your electronic toys after Christmas at Grandma's house, watching three televisions inside your vehicle, hoping to get there in time to get batteries for your new bathtub bubble machine,
you might be an American. Now I'd like to bring on our first guest, our only guest today, our special guest. Our special guest is Lori Price. She's the managing editor of Citizens for Legitimate Government, an online news source which has been operating for several years, I think since 2005. CLG is a multi-partisan activist group established to expose and resist U.S. imperialism, corporate terrorism, and the New World Order. Lori, are you here?
She's not here yet. I'm working on getting this number in to call her, Mike.
Okay.
Just a minute.
I could say that the first time I encountered CLG was many years ago. I don't know how I got on their mailing list, but they're a trusted news source. I personally don't read paper newspapers anymore. I don't trust them. I just don't think they're willing or perhaps able to tell the truth. What I do is I go to places like CLG, Veterans Today. I try to listen to radio hosts such as Kevin Barrett and Jim Fetzer.
Okay, here we go. We're going to call.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, why don't you talk a little more, Mike, and I'll see if I can get hold of her on my other line, and we'll see what we can work out here.
Okay. Well, I guess I've said as all I can say about CLG. I don't know. I just know they've been going for a while, and I just think new services that they provide, such as these, like CLG and Veterans Today, are just very valuable. I think that's where people can go to get their news today, rather than the obvious propaganda coming from the TV stations and from radio stations and newspapers. Just trying to find Veterans Today here online here.
Okay.
I wanted to go to...
Let me try ringing the number again.
Okay.
Hello? Hello?
Hello, Lori.
Yes.
This is Mike.
How you doing?
Good. We're on the air. Are you ready?
Sure.
Okay. Okay. I've introduced you, and I just thought we'd just start right in. And I was just wondering, CLG, Citizens for Legitimate Government, you've been with, it's been going for how long?
Well, it was founded in... December 2000, and I was on board in 01.
So did it come about in response to Bush's election? Is that the reason for it?
Right, because Bush was never elected. Exactly.
Right, yeah. And that's the reason for the name then, too, right?
Exactly.
Okay. And so How do you operate? I mean, how do you find your news? How do you get the? I mean, I go there. I was telling folks that CLG is one of the places I go that I trust to get the news. And where? How do you get your stuff to give to us?
Oh well, thank you for that. And the site address, actual address, is legitgov.org. Which, by the way, after the election of Barack Obama, a few people actually thought it was a birther group because the name being Citizens for Legitimate Government, the assumption was that I was making a conclusion that Barack Obama wasn't legitimate or something. So sometimes names change in different eras. But anyway, the site is legitgov.org, and I get the news by going to certain news sites that I find will actually let some level of truth seep out. And also, some people send me articles, summaries and so forth, the things they bump into along the way. And I use those that I can that are appropriate, and it's very much appreciated when people do that.
And how do you, you know, you've been going quite a long time, and how do you keep at it? I mean, you know, keep up the spirit. How do you...
Well, it sort of gets demoralizing after a while, but I think it's important that some of these stories that are less covered become the topic. Fukushima, for example, that was covered, you know, greatly when it happened, the first problems in March of 11, and then all the media coverage dissipated, and there seemed to be a programmed diminishing or cover-up of all the aftermath. And a lot of people don't even know that nuclear plants there actually melted down, I mean, because that happened sort of after. And I think it's important to keep on top of these stories that people at least know. And then they can decide from there what they want to do about the issues.
I remember about you guys is the Wellstone, the Wellstone event, and I remember it was, I saw it on Common Dreams, It was a picture of Wellstone. And then, of course, I didn't get any real stuff from Common Dreams, but then I think it was you guys who were telling what I see as the truth now about the Wellstone assassination.
Right. Some of these sites I sort of gave up on or had diminished, interest in when I see that they don't really cut to the chase. Some of them I had a lot of hope for, and then I don't. Certain sites were afraid to take on issues, for example, oddities of 9/11 and so forth, which now I guess it's considered sort of fringy to think about 9/11 truth, but you'd have to be out of your mind to believe the official story, and I don't, by the way. So, but anyway, some of these sites that were regarded as helpful or truthful or progressive, I sort of shy away from. But yes, we won't cover for anybody. We won't cover for Barack Obama. We won't cover for Dick Cheney when he was in power and so forth. So, yeah, Wellstone, that was a pretty obvious event to us. I mean, there was no bad weather that day, and the plane just drops out of the sky. I mean, it's a long time ago now. But, yes, that to me was obviously a political assassination to me, in my mind. But
well, that's cool. Cool that you knew that right away. I didn't really know it, I guess, until I read Jim Fetzer's book, and I didn't really realize all that happened. I have gone. I don't live too far from there now, and I've gone over to the site, and of course you can't find a real site. You have to go and walk through a bog and try to get there. And it said, there is a plaque that says 2,000 yards this way, but when you get out in the woods and what's 2,000 yards, you get kind of confused. But anyway, I think it was, I really thank you for doing that. And what do you think of Barack Obama and his election
Barack Obama, disappointment. You know, in my personal opinion, no matter what somebody's political views are, say what they are, rise and fall on your own merits. Be what you are, okay? So if say Rick Santorum's in the mix, at least in my opinion, my views of Rick Santorum and all that, he stands for what he believes in. I don't see him being money or power driven per se. I see him, for example, as somebody who I don't agree with on many issues. However, he's an honest broker of what his view of the truth is. When I look at Barack Obama, I can't respect the person. Because I just see him not fighting for what he claimed to be fighting for, what side he claims to be on. It's just, to me, sickening to me what he's done to the progressive movement. It's the only time you'll see anger rise in him is early on when Senator Representative Kucinich and so forth, certain people weren't going to vote for his Iraq war funding when he got in towards the wrap-up, and it's the only time he showed anger was at the progressives. I knew then, what he was and what he pretended to be. So he's a big disappointment to me, very frustrating. And, he's going to wait probably for New Year's Eve to be the one to announce the cuts to Social Security, in essence, the tying to the CPI, whatever, the technical way they'll cut people, the reality being people getting less benefits. He'll wait for a holiday evening or a Friday night to announce that surrender, and that's what he'll do when nobody's paying attention. So to avoid the quote fiscal cliff that Wall Street created. But anyway, sorry for the rambling answer, but Barack Obama's a frustrating topic.
How about Newtown? I mean, it seems to me there seems to be some sort of a pattern here. Over the last couple hundred years of false flags, and I don't know what CLG has said about it, but what do you think about Newtown and
there's oddities. In any event, there's always confusion at the beginning, and that's just normal. The way the media may mishear, and that's just part of anything that happens in history. But when you have these oddities piling up, larger than when the oddities start piling higher and higher, that one, the first day, if you watch the news unfold of Newtown, the every media report and farther down the line said a Bushmaster was left in the car, okay? Every report. And that wasn't just early news. That was all day long. Then we find out all the killings were done with the Bushmaster. So what, he walked in with different weapons, then left that thing in the car, then walked back. I mean, just like even greater oddities in the Virginia Tech shooting where the guy, I think, in 07, a few years ago, but anyway, he goes, he does shootings, he mails a videotape to NBC, or disc, whatever, to NBC, and then goes back and does more shootings. Now, that's the official timeline of the Virginia Tech incident, that he stops down, mails media materials, and goes back and continues killing. Now, if you want to believe that, then, I don't know what to say. But sometimes the earliest witnesses, for example, Newtown, when they said there were two shooters or three shooters, all those witnesses, then suddenly you don't hear from them. That this happens frequently, like Aurora, two shooters, then we don't hear anymore. Then suddenly the official witnesses come out, the ones that you see interviewed, the ones with certain facial expressions, it's the same. And I don't know, it's just very bizarre. I just wonder about these incidences, tragedies, but I just wonder.
If they were false flag or government black ops, the thing I wonder about is why do they think they have to keep doing this? What are they trying to accomplish with, Virginia Tech, Aurora, Colorado, Sandy Hook? What more do they need
to do? I don't know, but I find the outcome to be inevitably the same result, which is the rise of private security, the rise of more security, the rise of internal security. I find it all to be the same outcome, whether it's 9/11 and so forth, where there was private security that the Bush brother ran, and, of course, they immediately passed an immunity. There'd be no investigations into the security at Logan because they let the, I believe 9/11 was a clear inside job. But anyway, the answer is always more security, more funding, and I wouldn't be surprised if you see, for example, it starts with wealthy communities getting together. The local schools probably will say, and I'm predicting this, will say, let's get some armed guards. We'll pay for it. Keep our kids safe. It'll start there, and then the idea will trickle down into less wealthy communities, and then it'll pretty soon be taxpayers paying for the expansion of Blackwater, private security, get them in there, keep our kids safe. And that's how we do it. Just like censorship on the web starts with keeping kids safe, and then it expands outward from stopping, other crimes, in quotes, besides just keeping kids safe. So it usually starts there, because parents will spend any amount of money, of tax dollars, of this, of that, to keep kids safe. So that's where it'll start. And that's how I see the end result of Sandy Hook. I see that happening. That's what I see, the end result, so...
What else is on your radar screen? What are you covering now on CLG that we should be more aware about here?
Okay, well, I led with something that was kind of, this was in a mainstream. Sometimes these financial sources come up with something because there's some money angle, like they'll cover a company making a certain product, for example. One of the financial sources, had a story about a vaccine manufacturer saying that a flu pandemic's inevitable. And I led with this, and I'm thinking, now, why is a vaccine manufacturer, how do they know that a pandemic will be inevitable? Let's see, what would happen? Immediately, mandatory vaccines nationally, which they ran that up the flagpole with the regular flu vaccines. Mandatory vaccines. Okay, wide scale. Now, how much money could a company make to make those vaccines? Guaranteed, and of course, they passed the immunity of vaccine manufacturers. I think one of the Christmas Eves when Bush was in power, I think 05, and I think Kennedy called it a gift to the vaccine manufacturers. There's no, immunity generally if they, under crisis, make a product that fails. So, let's see, how many millions and billions would they get if the government declares a pandemic and mandatory vaccines? Somebody's going to be making a lot of money on this. And I just find it odd, and I led with this today's, this morning's CLG newsletter that a pandemic's inevitable, announced by a vaccine manufacturer, not the scientific community, but I find that odd, and I think people should be troubled by that. How do they know this? People should be asking, how are they so sure about this, and wonder why they're interested in these pandemics.
Lori, thanks for being with us tonight. And could
sure.
you give folks the URL, the place they can go to find a CLG and find you? And maybe is there a forum on CLG where people can comment and interact with you on there too?
Oh, great. Thanks for asking about that. Yes, on Facebook, if you, quote, like us there or whatever, you can comment and talk. If you go to the main site, which is www.legitgov.org, then on the left side there's a Twitter feed. You can follow, click there. But there's also the Facebook page, and if you go there, there's a lot of lively discussions over there that take place. And you can also comment on the site itself. You have to register, because otherwise, sadly, you get spammers and sales things that they have, you know. But you go there, you can post there. If you're not selling products, you can post freely, pretty much. You know what I'm saying? So you can also post on the site itself. And I send a newsletter daily. You can subscribe there too. So thanks for asking about that.
So people can go to what's the URL again? The website address?
Oh, sorry, legitgov.org. LEGITGOV. .org, which is Citizens for Legitimate Government's website, and you can go there, and
then you sign up for the newsletter. They're on somewhere.
Right on the
and
top. You subscribe, and then you got to confirm. You know, they send you the code, and you click on it. It's kind of annoying, but it's not my system. But you will be able to subscribe, obviously for free, and then you can post comments on the site itself or over on the Facebook and all that. So. And the news is updated daily on that site if you want to just go and check out all the summaries there.
Well, Lori, thank you very much for taking the time, and also thank you especially for all the work you've done over the years and day by day by day. And it's just a big task, and I just want to thank you personally, and I hope you'll have time to come back and visit with us again sometime.
Oh, I would love to, Mike. Thank you so much for asking me on the show, and I hope you have happy holidays despite all the news around us.
Yeah, okay.
Thank
you too.
You.
Okay,
thanks,
have a good
lot.
Night.
You
bye.
As well. Bye-bye.
Good morning, boys and girls. Welcome to Public School, to America, to your life. We might as well get started, and we may as well begin at the beginning. The moon landings were faked. Also, morning recess is at 10:15 sharp. You will wear a coat and you will line up quietly along the chalkboard when I snap my fingers like this. The FBI and CIA killed John F. Kennedy and his brother Robert. No peeing in the sandbox. Anyone who does will live to regret it. Please write Gulf of Tonkin in black pen only across the top of your hand. We'll get to that later. Lunch begins promptly at 11:45. What you do not finish by 12 noon will be packed neatly back into your sack or lunchbox and take it home. Nothing stays in the cloakroom overnight, nothing. Pearl Harbor is not what your parents think it was. We will be having Parents Pearl Harbor Day in December, debunking that whole Tom Brokaw Greatest Generation garbage. No talking, that goes without saying, correct? Good. The FBI and ATF burned children your age alive at a place called Waco. They blew children your age to bits at a place called Oklahoma City. If you brought your rugs as you were instructed, you will have nap time at 9:30 this morning. September 11, 2001, which you may or may not have heard of, was done by your own government to start wars to make money for the wealthy men and women who actually run this country and this world. The word democracy is used in American media is propaganda itself. Voting and marching in parades down the middle of the street are virtually useless. If you had any sense at all, you would not come back tomorrow. But if you do, we will learn, and we will understand, and we will grow. And in due time, we will blow the lid off this pop stand. And here's something. Take it to the beach. That spring break reading list, The American Zeitgeist. What can you take with you from your busy life, from this one chance at some time alone to really soak it all in, the sun, the news, really catch up on all that stuff? So when you come back to the classroom or office, you will be an even better you, tan and informed and ready to, well, just be a better American and thinner and a better student, parent and spouse and employee and a better person overall. Something with some pop and excitement and current events and just a good read. Well, there is something, I guess. There's JFK, Why He Died and Why It Matters, by this James Douglas. But then if you read that, it will change your whole world. You would not be able to, after that. It would be impossible to carry on the fake, phony, How about 50 Shades of Vampire Blood? The Boy with the New Brighton Tattoo, and maybe that new self-help book by that one guy, Six Superheroes Saved Sacramento.
Somewhere between September 11th and today, the enemy morphed from a handful of terrorists to the American population at large. Once upon a time in the woods on an island down a rabbit hole, there were 19 very, very bad men. They were called terrorists, and they had box cutters. They're very bad. They cut boxes. They defeat air forces and put holes in buildings and bring down buildings. If you ever see a box cutter, stop, drop, and roll. Anyhow, there were these guys, these box cutters. They were the enemy. If you were for box cutters, you were against us. Hey, now, we're all the bad men. Somehow we all became 19 men with box cutters who cannot be trusted in airports or to talk on the phone without another adult listening. Somehow we are all the enemy now. No matter how that all happened, don't worry yourself about it. Good night. Sleep well. Do not get up to go to the bathroom or get a drink. It will take you very far away for a very long time. And we can do that. No one will ever know or care. Sweet dreams now. Go to sleep.
The New American Dream presents an American Hero Special. A while back, we honored patriotic singer-songwriter Toby Keith. He put a boot up their ass. Awesome. This week, we honor General Norman Schwarzkopf, General Colin Powell, General Tommy Franks, General something-something Petraeus, and all the other generals out there in charge of our patriotic military who are protecting us from people plowing mountains with oxen and killing them before they fly those oxen over here and dive bomb us with box cutters and not allow us to worship in the churches of our choice. General Minkoff, General Colonoscopy, General Wiener, General Betrays Us, we salute you. You are not a pervert or a murderer or an insane person. You are an American hero. This portion of tonight's program is being brought to you by the Underpants Bomber, the D.C. Sniper, the Times Square Fizzler, and the Al-Qaeda Conclave Mosque, Corn Palace of Mitchell, South Dakota. Allah is great. Wait, no, Allah is great and most awesome. How's it going? We are new to your country. We want to kill you and take your Wii sports software. Our high-rise layers are too, how you say it, more of dude caves and not too gnarly and not cool for real bowling. Or make benefit glorious nation of Kebabistan. Death to Peyton Manning and NASCARs and WWF. We come from a very organized, well-kept, well-swept cave in the mountains of Afghanistan, far, far up in sheep nosebleed section. We did 9/11 and other things like the 93 World Trade Center bombing and other stuff for sure, lots of other stuff that we did. We are not the FBI or the CIA, ha, that's for sure. And for sure you would be a silly person who does not fit in your neighborhood to think so. We have nothing to do with George W. Bush, Bill Clinton, Bush the senior, one who sits in the front row at the World Series with his pig-resembling wife, or Obama bin Laden, oy vey, Barack Obama? Thank you very much. Happy times. Have a good day, and please to stay on the same page. Take it to the next level. Keep it real, and be always awesome.
Good morning, children. This week we're starting my award-winning unit, the unit that won the Teachers Association Geography Award last year at the big Teachers Association meeting. Many other teachers around the country are now copying my work. That should be illegal. I'll get them. Well, for now, you're the lucky recipients of having me as your teacher. If you will open your packet on the upper left-hand corner of your desk, this is the first day of our Where the Fuck Is here. We'll ask, where the fuck is Syria? Where the fuck is Yemen? Where the fuck is Pakistan? And on Friday, we'll ask ourselves, where the fuck is Bahrain? Next Monday, we'll begin a full week of what the fuck do we care? And next month, we'll start on a project that'll take us to the end of the year. How the fuck can we all just get rich like real Americans and forget all the rest of the world in this geography crap? No, I think that's where we really pull all this together, where it will all start to make sense. Well, then, please open your fucking palates and let's begin.
The United States is not a police state, and you would be a fat communist soccer lover wearing lederhosen and a tiny Bavarian hat with a feather and tight jacket and knee socks with buckle shoes who does not fit in with the rest of the family at Thanksgiving dinner if you thought so. There are not police everywhere. You do not have to go where the police put you in order to hold your sign and have your freedom of speech like a Bolshevik perched atop a potato crate. This is America. There are not thousands and thousands of people making their living off of the war on terror in Homeland Security, the Border Patrol, the U.S. Army, the airport, box cutter, shampoo, bazooka up the wazoo, finder guys, the video game industry, the bullet industry, the casket and handcuff and easy bake oven secret spy camera industrial complex. It's just not a police state. The police are not shock troops protecting the rich against the poor. It's not. Say it. It's not.
It was a time of great and exalting excitement. The country was up in arms. The war was on. In every breast burned the holy fire of patriotism. The drums were beating, the bands playing, the toy pistols popping, the bunched firecrackers hissing and spluttering. On every hand, far down the receding and fading spread of roofs and balconies, a fluttering wilderness of flags flashed in the sun. Daily, the young volunteers marched down the wide avenue, gay and fine in their new uniforms, the proud fathers and mothers and sisters and sweethearts cheering them with voices choked with happy emotion as they swung by. Nightly, the packed mass meetings listened, panting, the patriot oratory, which stirred the deepest deeps of their hearts, which they interrupted at briefest intervals with cyclones of applause. Tears running down their cheeks the while. In the churches, the pastors preached devotion to flag and country and invoked the God of battles, beseeching his aid in our good cause in outpourings of fervid eloquence which moved every listener.
It was indeed a glad and gracious time. And the half-dozen rash spirits that ventured to disapprove of the war and cast a doubt upon its righteousness straightaway got such a stern an angry warning that for their personal safety's sake, they quickly shrank out of sight and offended no more in that way.
Sunday morning came. Next day, the battalions would leave for the front. The church was filled. The volunteers were there, their young faces alight with martial dreams, visions of the stern advance, the gathering momentum, the rushing charge, the flashing sabers, the flight of the foe, the tumult, the enveloping smoke, the fierce pursuit, the surrender.
Then home from the war, bronzed heroes welcomed, adored, submerged in golden seas of glory. With the volunteers sat their dear ones, proud, happy, and envied by the neighbors and friends who had no sons and brothers to send forth to the field of honor, there to win for the flag or, failing, die the noblest of noble deaths. The service proceeded. A war chapter from the Old Testament was read. The first prayer was said. It was followed by an organ burst that shook the building. And with one impulse, the house rose with glowing eyes and beating hearts and poured out that tremendous invocation. And came the long prayer. None could remember the like of it for passionate pleading and moving and beautiful language. The burden of its supplication was that an ever-merciful and benign Father of us all would watch over our noble young soldiers and aid, comfort, and encourage them in their patriotic work, bless them, shield them in the day of battle and the hour of peril, bear them in his mighty hand, make them strong and confident, invincible on the bloody onset, help them crush the foe, grant to them and to their flag and country imperishable honor and glory. An aged stranger entered and moved with slow and noiseless step up the main aisle. His eyes fixed upon the minister, his long body clothed in a robe that reached to his feet, his head bare, his white hair descending in a frothy cataract to his shoulders, his seamy face unnaturally pale, pale even to ghastliness. All eyes following him and wondering, he made his silent way. Without pausing, he ascended to the preacher's side and stood there waiting. With shut lids, the preacher, unconscious of his presence, continued his moving prayer and at last finished it with the words uttered in fervent appeal, "Bless our arms, grant us the victory, O Lord and God, Father and protector of our land and flag." The stranger touched his arm, motioned him to step aside, which the startled minister did. Took his place. During some moments, he surveyed the spellbound audience with solemn eyes in which burned an uncanny light. And in a deep voice, he said,
"I come from the throne bearing a message from Almighty God." The words smote the house with a shock. If the stranger perceived it, he gave no attention. "He has heard the prayer of his servant, your shepherd, and will grant it if such be your desire, after I, his messenger, shall have explained to you its import, that is to say, its full import. For it is like unto many of the prayers of men, and it asks for more than he who utters it is aware of, except he pause and think. Lord, our Father, our young patriots, idols in our hearts, go forth into battle. Be thou near them. With them in spirit, we also go forth from the sweet peace of our beloved firesides to smite the foe. O Lord our God, help us tear their soldiers to bloody shreds with our shells. Help us to cover their smiling fields with the pale forms of their patriot dead. Help us to drown the thunder of the guns with the shrieks of their wounded, writhing in pain. Help us to lay waste their humble homes with a hurricane of fire. Help us to wring the hearts of their unoffending widows with unavailing grief. Help us to turn them out roofless with their little children to wander unfriended in the wastes of their desolated land in rags and hunger and thirst. Sports of the sun flames in summer and the icy winds of winter. Broken in spirit, worn with travail, imploring thee for the refuge of the grave and denied it. For our sakes who adore thee, Lord, blast their hopes, blight their lives, protract their bitter pilgrimage, make heavy their steps, water their way with tears, stain the white snow with the blood of their wounded feet. We ask it in the spirit of love, of him who is the source of love, who is the ever-faithful refuge and friend of all that are sore beset and seek his aid with humble and contrite hearts. Amen. Ye have prayed it. If ye still desire it, speak. The messenger of the Most High waits.
It was believed afterward that the man was a lunatic, because there was no sense in what he said.
The War Prayer by Mark Twain. If you don't tune to Black Op Radio, you're watching television after you listen to this radio program. Tonight's programming is being brought to you by the CIA, the United States Army, United States Navy, the FBI. Just saying. And make sure to watch this next Wednesday night on CBS after American Idol. Are you smarter than a prison guard?
Well, it's been another long week in Mount Liberty, Nebraska, my hometown. Stephanie Moorman is from Mount Liberty. She graduated from Mount Liberty Senior High School in 1972 after having switched over to public from St. Cynthia's in 8th or 9th grade, more or less because everyone else was doing it. She went to Wayne State College, earned a teaching degree, and then left to go get a job in Iowa, the progressive state to the east. The one that used to be famous for 6-on-6 girls high school basketball. And the whole kind of this whole state kind of just evoked a sense of having gone on a couple more years in school farther than the folks in Nebraska. And the Des Moines Register, when it was a real newspaper, well, it was like a phylum difference when compared to the Omaha World Herald or the local Wednesday Miracle. Growing up in the four corners of Nebraska, South Dakota, Iowa, and Minnesota, Stephanie developed certain general ideas about the people in the different states. For example, if a presidential candidate came through town, the folks in Nebraska would not notice unless he or she carried with him in their entourage a member of the Cornhuskers football team. The people in South Dakota would notice and recognize and understand, but they would not mention it at supper. The people of Minnesota would wonder if the candidate had 10,000 lakes in his or her state and forests, and professional sports team, and a major metropolitan central metroplex thing, and the Green Mill. And if not, which was not likely, then what's the big deal? The folks in Iowa would walk up to the candidate, shake his or her hand, and hold the door for their entire entourage as they all entered the cafe together. Then they would sit down and talk and have pie and go on to the next thing. It was like that one football coach told his players that when you get to the end zone, act like you've been there before. So that was where Stephanie wanted to go, and that's where she was. She went to where the earth was deep, deep black, like new tires. She married an Iowa husband, had Iowa kids, and taught at a small Catholic high school in St. Smith in the north central part of the state. George Carlin was wrong, junior, senior high school. Steve, the husband, did not have to go to work for some non-credible, non-surprising reason. So this morning, Steve was still sleeping after Stephanie finished her coffee and raspberry oat bagel. she got a text message from three teacher friends to meet them up at the bowling alley since school was canceled because of the blizzard. The text said, snow day, with a photo of a pitcher of beer. Stephanie said, no, you go ahead, three times, and then shut her phone off. She teaches world history and wonders now if it should have been creative writing or English. She coaches basketball and track and should retire, and then maybe she'll do something different. Maybe she'll be a writer someday. Writing is always someday. It's just so super easy to put off, and then you never do it. But nobody cares, and so why should you care? And it was a crazy idea anyway, so at least the lawn looks great and the kids are happy. Stephanie took her laptop upstairs and found her favorite almost writing spot in the small bedroom with the pitched ceiling, so you can't really do anything in there but lie down or sit down, pulling her chair up to the window overlooking the snow-covered back lawn. She tread lightly up the stairs, now hoping Steve might sleep just a little while longer, maybe give her a chance to pull off this velvet revolution. She felt excited, frightened. A lump formed in her throat as if she had chosen on the spur of the moment to jump the Berlin Wall, and now she realized she should pack extra socks and maybe other things. Stephanie sat down, opened up new message in her email program, and began to write. She was actually writing. Someday had become today. She looked up quickly to see outside, the icicles hanging down from the roof, the swing set and shed. She rested her fingers on the keyboard. She had all the teacher email addresses and accumulated friends, and then there's always Facebook. Her page and Steve's, and even the kids, if she really wanted to go crazy. She would have an audience that she really wanted. Looked out the window and removed her hands from the white machine. She reached without looking and pulled the Marlboro Lights pack and matches and lit up. She drew it down and blew the smoke out and kept looking out the window. Writing doesn't do anything. Nobody reads, and even if they do, they only read like about three fiction authors in the whole country over and over. But for sure, you sitting down up there and taking time out of your day and mine and not getting a damn thing done except some kind of self-absorbed yada yada is just wrong. You can't change anything by writing. You're too old. You're not good enough. It would take too long. You don't know enough about it. And how would you ever get published, let alone in any bookstores? Who's going to read it? Just think about that. There should be your answer right there. Letting the cigarette dangle from her lips, like an old-time big city reporter on Deadline, she wrote. She was writing, and so she was a writer. The big idea that she had been writing in her head, up and down the hall, sitting in the teacher's lounge, at the kitchen table, cutting her meatloaf with a fork, for years and years poured out of her head like a bulging water balloon poked the sharp pin.
And I Laugh by Stephanie Moorman. There's a photo on the internet that makes me laugh. A little brown boy holding a silent scream forever in four color. A horrified little fellow now has no arms or legs, no brothers, sisters, or parents. And I laugh out loud. I laugh at the Marines being all they could possibly be in God's creation, at their tough man commercials. The Army of One. What a hoot. The rough guy coaches and players who let this boy die. What comedy watching them feel strong while letting the real battles be fought by little guys with sticks and bicycles. The boy has a bandaged head. He looks so scared his hair might turn white, as in a Hitchcock film. Sort of makes me chuckle. I laugh at the ministers here in town, here on this TV, saying, bless our troops as they defend our freedom. I laugh at the well-schooled and coiffed newspaper columnists with their earnest, close-cropped photos in 400 papers read by 40 million people in 40 million cities, and I laugh. The boy is flat on his back on dirty cement, his stubs hastily wrapped in ace bandages, surrounded by the world trying to get a look, by photographers and people on their way to work and out to dinner. We're nothing, nothing, nothing. Because this boy now has no arms, no legs. Nothing we do today will mean a thing, because we've ripped the arms and legs from this boy as if he was a fly and we are us. This boy, who could be my boy, lying there at the feet of the world looking the other way. God damn us. Please, give us what we deserve. If you're a just God, rain down fire and hell on our heads, lightning bolts upon our backyard decks, rivers of excrement on our smooth, well-scrubbed streets. Please, dear God, we pray. When I awoke this morning, I thought it essential to the world order and being right and a good person that I shower, help out with the dishes, be on time, and drive on the right side of the road. Do a good job, be pleasant, smile. But now, I just can't stop laughing. The world thinks it still matters. And that's kind of funny in a way. There, the flag flying over the Catholic elementary school. The yellow ribbons tied to the light poles on both sides of Main Street. Stray cats wearing yellow ribbons around their necks. Roaming the night, looking both ways before crossing the street. As if it mattered. You're never so wrong as when you damage a young boy. We sit down here like the Who's in Whoville, celebrating the coming of war season, while this boy lies on the cold floor.
Stephanie lit another cigarette and looked out the window and waited. Then she read through her piece again. She heard noises and a voice downstairs, and she lit another cigarette. She hurried through spell check, found her address book and pasted and loaded the BCC, not the CC. People get angry. They will say you spammed them as if an extra email will give them polio. She heard footsteps on stairs. Steph? Stephanie?
She looked at her message and her heartbeat, and she read parts of it again. She hit send. She pushed back from the table, put her feet on the table, pulled a long drag.
Steph, what are you doing up here?
Nothing, he mumbled. She looked into the light now cascading through the window, the sun having elbowed its way through a thick cloud cover.
Hey, I said, what are you doing?
She turned, put her feet on the floor and faced him. Writing, he smiled.
And that's the news from Mount Liberty. Where all the soldiers are thugs, all the Democrats are cowards, and all the Homeland Security COINTELPRO blown nuts are about average.
That wraps up our final New American Dream radio show of 2012. We'll see you next week, next year, same time, same place. And we hope you'll be here to listen with us. We'd like to thank WorldNewsTrust.com, thespiritualun.org and June2508.com, all of whom helped to sponsor our show. We'd especially like to thank you, our listeners, and all of the many guests who have joined us through this year and the one before to help us bring interesting topics to you each week. And thank you, Mike, and good night.
Good night, Chuck. Stay warm down there. And good night, Mrs. Calabash. Good night, Todd Beamer. Good night, Mark Bingham. Good night, Daniel Lewin. Good night, Ken Lay. Good night, Timothy McVeigh. And good night, Barbara Olson, wherever you are.